to do. But from dusk till dawn, as the clock ticks on, something happens to you. In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the that's the time you miss her most of all. You'd be hers if only she would call in the wee small hours.
my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender.
Could we please have a roll call?
Commissioner Barsky? Here. Commissioner Jones? Commissioner Richards?
Here.
Commissioner Lynn? Here. Commissioner Tolis?
Here.
Vice Chair West?
Here.
Chair Hart?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Do we have any speaker slips for the public forum?
No, Chair Hart.
Thank you very much. And we'll jump right on to presentations. A1. Would you like that, Vito?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the commission. This evening, we'd like to introduce Cecilia Choa, our management assistant for the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department. And I'll turn it over to Cecilia to say a few words about herself as she introduces herself to the commission.
Hello, everyone. I am very pleased to be here today. I came into the department with great excitement, having some background on parks and recreation before. And I graduated from UCLA, did a master's in public administration, and worked several years in nonprofits down in Los Angeles, as well as the city of Baldwin Park, recreation down there. I am very happy to call Goleta my home. I've got my three boys. And it's a great place to be and a great place to work. Thank you.
Welcome. It's great to have
Welcome
you on board.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on. A2, Gersh Park update. Mr. Harrington.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, while Mr. Harrington comes up to the podium for tonight's presentation in the PowerPoint that you see on the screen before you, as the commission is aware, we've had a number of organizations in the community that work with the city on many projects and programs related to recreation. And so tonight you'll receive an update from Mr. Harrington on all the various things going on at Gersh Park, and we're pleased to have him here tonight. He's been a great partner to work with on a lot of stuff. And so without further ado, we'll turn it over to Mr. Harrington.
Thanks, Vito. Want to make sure that this changes
hard, I hear.
Yeah, right. Doesn't seem like it's I guess you have to hit the
get it into slideshow mode.
There you go. Okay, there we go. So thanks so much for having me. Again, I'm Ryan Harrington. I'm the executive director of Gersh Park. Been in the parks and recreation field for 15 years, four of which in the public sector with the City of Santa Barbara Parks and Rec, 11 of which in the nonprofit sector, two at Ealing's Park, and over 9 years now at Gersh Park. This is a real similar presentation that I gave you last year with the new folks on the commission. I thought I would give it again and let you know what we're all about, but also give you several updates about what we're doing at Gersh Park. So I'm going to go over our unique nonprofit business plan, main sources of funding, our public-private partnership with you, the City of Goleta, the facilities at Gersh Park, our programs and events enterprise, operational fundraising that we do every year at the park, our Fields Forever capital campaigns. I'll briefly touch on the recreational needs assessment and our future potential capital campaigns at Gersh Park. So our unique nonprofit business plan, you all know, I'm assuming that we are a nonprofit park, and the park originally was set up to be a county park. And when the county respectfully declined the donation from Windmark and Mark Linehan, the nonprofit entity was created to run the park essentially as a placeholder until the county or the eventual city could take it over. Now, we've been so darn successful as a nonprofit over the years that it sure seems like we're going to continue this somewhat into perpetuity because of that success. These are our main sources of funding. You'll see in the green, those are our user fees. That's $170,000 a year. We have an endowment that's $2.5 million that we draw 5% off of every year, so that's roughly $110,000. The City of Goleta, helps to fund us at $100,000 a year for maintenance, general maintenance, and we close the rest of the pie with operational fundraising. So it's about $430,000 a year. It kind of goes up and down over the years depending on things like rain, drought. You know, our water has been ridiculously expensive for a couple of years because we haven't had any rain. And things like that will increase our budget from year to year. We have a really successful public-private partnership with you, the City of Goleta. We all know that you give us $100,000 a year, and you've assisted with several capital projects over the years. You know, I'll say that's probably upwards of $900,000, $1 million that you, the city, have given us. And we have leveraged about $18 million of resources to build the facility and build up the programs that you see today. So you'll see that the public money that was put into this is far smaller than the nonprofit or the private money that was put into this, making it an extremely great value for you, the city of Goleta, and the citizens of Goleta. So we've been there 16 years, and we've constantly provided recreational opportunities for the community, youth and adult, and we've done senior programs in the past. These are our facilities. You'll see to the west, we've got three youth baseball fields and a multi-sport meadow where we have youth sports and agility dog programs. Our junior field in the middle is a full-size, major league-size baseball field. All of these fields are converted over to soccer fields in the fall, so we have AYSO soccer that takes over all the outfields. We have a multi-sports field over kind of in the middle of the park that's fundamentally a softball field, but we play very little softball on it. We've got festivals like the Lemon Festival, 4th of July. We played a lot of baseball on it this year, and it's, you know, a soccer field as well. Gersh-Hockman soccer field down on the bottom right, on the east of the park, synthetic turf soccer field. We raised $1.25 million to put that in 2008. And then we have party areas, picnic areas, a playground, Camino Real playground, a community room, et cetera. 25 acres in total for what you'll see today at Gersh Park. So this is the most important part of my presentation, I would say, tonight. This is our programs and events enterprise. Essentially, we partner with other nonprofits and private sector businesses to facilitate recreational programs and community events. Now, if you've ever seen a Parks and Recreational Department, a traditional department, it's busy as all heck trying to facilitate programming. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of people. Big staff, HR issues, dealing with parents, coaches, counselors, I mean, you name it, it's a big, big task. And so what we've done is we've streamlined the process and partnered with these nonprofits. So we are out of the program business. We are focused on maintaining the facility and improving the facility. And it's been a model that has worked wonderfully. I think it's a model that can be used for other organizations, similar organizations in town, like the community center. I'm on the board of the Goleta Valley Community Center. We have a very similar model there that has been successful for a long time. So basically what we get out of these users is real valuable resources for capital funding, user fees, obviously the quality programs, but also volunteers and labor and man hours, etc. I mean, we leverage as many resources as we possibly can. So these are the programs that we partner with at the park. AYSO Region 122, 3,000 families at least participate in AYSO. About 1,500 play at the park. This year we'll actually have more because UCSB has had to close a few fields for the fall, and so we're cramming in even more soccer fields. I'm talking to those guys right now. We host the Splash Tournament every year, Santa Barbara Soccer Club. Over 1,000 kids play at the park pretty much year-round. Dos Pueblos Little League, they have over, I think this year is about 330 families. They've turned into just a wonderful partner with, you know, a lot of different resources and a real high-quality program out on the fields. We host club and travel baseball tournaments and doubleheaders, so teams come from all over the place to play at Gersh Park. Now, this is an important point as well. You know, we are a neighborhood park. We are a Goleta park. We're also a regional park. You know, we draw folks from all over to use the park. There are some days where our kids are playing kids in their neighborhood from down the street, etc. And then there are other days where our kids are playing, you know, teams from Santa Clarita and Bakersfield and Fresno. It's great to see, you know, this kind of you know, competition and sportsmanship, but it also brings, you know, revenue to the city. These people have to eat at restaurants. They, you know, get hotel rooms, et cetera. So it does help to stimulate the economy to a certain extent, but it also, you know, extends these children's kind of realm as far as who they're playing and what they're experiencing. We have adaptive programs. The Dos Pueblos Little League Challenger Division has over 100 families participating every year. We also host AYSO's VIP soccer program, two Special Olympics soccer tournaments a year, and then we've had Challengers flag football and cheer in the past. Here's AYSO's VIP on the left, and last year's Special Olympics, I think they're champion of one of the tournaments. We have a grass volleyball program that's out there Tuesdays and Saturdays in the fall and the spring. Pretty much year-round, we have Central Coast Soccer League, adult men's league that plays on our turf field every Sunday all day, and then Santa Barbara Women's Soccer Organization on Saturdays. So you can see there's a little something for everyone here. Men's Adult Baseball League, we host a ton of different workout groups, the latest of which that's really taken off is Sweat Outdoors and 805 Fitness. Goleta Valley Dog Club is a small agility program that's there nearly every day of the week. They've been using the park for, I think, 12 years plus. Really easy folks to work with. Goleta Lemon Festival, 30,000 people come through you know, the park every year to go to the festival. And again, we don't have to, you know, organize it. It's put on by the Chamber of Commerce. We've done animal events in the past. This actual event has left the park and gone to City College. Fireworks festival every year, cramming it in among all the other things that are going on. It's a big, you know, coordination to get the Rotary Club to put this on every year. And again, we're just providing the facility at the end of the day. Gersh Park Egg Hunt, I started this 8 years ago. I think this will be our 9th annual event. 1,000 kids come. I put out no publicity, and they still come. It's great. It's over. Exactly. It's over in 2 minutes. I get a lot of help from the community and the Rotary Club, et cetera. It's a great thing. So then we close up our budget with operational fundraising, and this is a really big part of my job, not only operationally, but capital fundraising, and I'll get into that one in a second. But operationally, I do 2 annual mailing appeals a year. We have a corporate sponsorship program. Companies like Marburg, Cottage Health Systems, Montecito Bank and Trust, Camino Real all support us through the corporate sponsorship program. I write a lot of grants, trying to, you know, fix up the facilities and make it better for all of our groups. And then we take individual gifts, of course. And that totals about $50,000 a year. So our capital campaigns that we've run in the past, Fields Forever was about $6 million to purchase essentially the entire west side of the park. So the park started out as a 12-acre park. And that went to the basketball courts. And in the early 2000s, we spent, or, you know, raised $6 million, purchased the 13 acres to the west, and permanently located the baseball fields. Now, the baseball fields were always, you know, thought to be moved somewhere else. So they were put in quite temporarily. Drainage was a problem. There were no bathrooms, et cetera. And so it was a big effort to raise $6 million in the first place and get it going. And so now we're trying to fix it up and get it up to speed so that everyone has a, you know, great time using the facility, especially Dos Pueblos Little League. This is our turf field that we put in 2008. Picture of Pat O'Malley, who's the visionary behind the field. This has been a huge success for us. We will have to replace it somewhere around 2023. That'll be another fundraising effort. So to finish off our baseball fields, Fields Forever 3 is focused on our field house. So the picture on the left is our groundbreaking last year, and the picture on the right is the finished product, the field house. We have permanent bathrooms, and this is such a big deal for us. You know, it seems like a very small thing, but when you don't have bathrooms and you use porta potties, you know, it's a hassle for young kids, the children of special needs, you know, anyone essentially. So we have permanent bathrooms, and this year has gone smoother than any other year out there. We also built a shell of a concession stand on the far side of the building that you'll see there, that I'm currently raising money for. And then and the field house officially is titled Marburg Industries Field House for a generous donation that Marburg gave to us. We replaced our dilapidated and out-of-date playground, and we'd actually like to build another playground for 5 to 12-year-olds. The one we built is more for 2 to 5-year-olds. And we would like to build a new batting cage facility that we did pour the pads for and pull electricity to. So we're getting closer to that, you know, as we work on all of that. The concession stand has been a really interesting process, and we just launched an RFP process to bring a professional concessionaire in here. And we'll see how that all goes. Essentially, it's a shell, as you can see. That's the inside, the right-hand side. And we're looking for somebody to partner with to facilitate concessions. If you have anyone that you know think would be interested, float them my way, give them my contact, or you know, I'm happy to reach out to them directly. Recreational needs assessment, this was more for last year's presentation, but I'll just sum up. I basically believe that youth soccer fields in general in Santa Barbara County are absolutely needed, and always will be. We will always be in deficit in field space. Youth baseball fields in 30 years or over the time frame that the needs assessment covered, yes, we will need more baseball fields. But for now, the city's in pretty good shape. I would say be very careful with baseball fields because they're very expensive to build and maintain, et cetera. Other suggestions, skate park is an absolute need, and an even larger need are off-leash dog parks. We've had so much demand for off-leash dog use in the park. In fact, we had an off-leash dog program. It was very small and limited, and it did not work with everything else that went on in the park. And there are a few people in the community that are upset about it. But all in all, what we've learned is that there's a huge need in the entire city of Goleta, and we need more than one. We need multiple parks that will accept off-leash dogs. Our future capital campaigns, I talked about this last year, but we would love to continue and expand our public-private partnership with you, the City of Goleta, and provide additional fields and programs for the community to enjoy. And what that means is we need maximum utilization of the park first, and we're so very close to that. We have a few seasons where use tails off, and actually it gives us time to renovate, etc. But we do have little windows of opportunity for a few more programs. Once we hit maximum utilization, we can start talking about things like more synthetic turf fields. Obviously, we're going to have to replace our synthetic turf field that I talked about. Field lighting. Now, this is something that we'll definitely be talking about in the years to come. Our soccer field is already in demand to the point where we are using portable lights. And, you know, the soccer organizations would love to see us build permanent lighting. We have approvals for lighting on two fields, and from what I've seen, I don't think they're necessarily the two fields that we would jump at lighting right away. And the approvals state that we're allowed 65-foot light poles, and I think for the new modern light systems, you need a minimum of 85, and it might be up to 100. But the new lighting systems, if you do them right, have no halo or bleed into the surrounding area, which would be a major, you know, talking point for the neighborhoods, etc. So together, you know, we can really serve the park and recreational needs for the community. We can leverage our resources and make really amazing things happen. Our public-private partnership costs the city dramatically less money and resources than a traditional parks and recreational model. And I would just like to say thanks so much for your time and consideration. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Ryan. That was a great presentation. And I just want to say again thank you for all of the things that you do for the community through that facility. It's a remarkable facility and a critical asset for us, so I'm real grateful for that. You mentioned in this last slide the exact point that I wanted to make. We talk about coordination from our side along with you in terms of leveraging that resource. I know you've worked very closely with Vito and his staff. Is there anything, though, additional that's on your wish list in terms, aside from funding, there's just never enough money for anything, but aside from funding, is there anything that you would like the city to provide that, or, you know, maybe some change in communication, coordination? Is there anything on your wish list for us?
I don't have a single complaint or need for change as far as communication. The staff is great. We communicate well. Putting together events and getting permits, et cetera, has gone smoothly. The 4th of July is a prime example. Really difficult to coordinate everything, and we're always right in the thick of it and, you know, get everything approved at the last minute, but there's really no other way to put that together. No, we're happy. My board's happy. Tony Vallejo comes to almost every board meeting. Okay. Bob Morgenstern as well. So I think we're very well meshed together.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Commissioner West.
Hi, I have two. My first question is actually in regards to if we were the dream team of Parks and Rec commissioners, what would you like us to do to help get the dog parks going more in the city of Goleta?
Well, if you go to some of the neighborhood pocket parks, you'll find that a lot of them are already off-leash dog parks. And I don't think they need a ton of infrastructure to put over the top as far as make official dog parks. I've seen dog parks where you put up fencing, get a porta potty or two out there, which is not ideal. Obviously, you want real bathrooms, but it's a starting point. And some kind of parking, which, again, for a lot of the pocket parks is not ideal. But right now, you have dog parks, but if animal control shows up, everyone is getting tickets or is scrambling to get the heck out of there, which happens at Gersh Park all the time. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. So dedicated space is the key. And, you know, whatever infrastructure that can go along with that is also very important. But, you know, you can put those together in small steps, especially as programs get more popular.
Great, thank you. And then my last question was the name Gersh Hoffman, since I know that family. Can you tell me a little bit or tell us a little bit about the history of how the park got that name, you know, and the continuing and ongoing relationship you have with that family?
Absolutely. So the park actually was originally called Camino Real Park, and the Camino Real Park Foundation was the entity that owned and operated it, and that was the 12 acres to the east. Lester Gersh owned essentially that entire city block, and he put together the deal with Mark Linehan and Windmark to build Camino Real Marketplace to include at least an 8-acre open space to the south. So Windmark had a vision to create a park, etc. The park was born. When the park originally tried to raise the money for Fields Forever 1, it was an uphill battle, and the Gersh Hockman family stepped in and helped us to, you know, facilitate that and fund it. Eventually, they gave us our, it was our entire $2.5 million endowment throughout the years, and the park was named Gersh Park after that. They do continue to be quite active. Daniel Hockman is the eldest sibling of Ruline Hockman, the daughter of Lester and Viola Gersh, which the official name of the park is the Lester and Viola S. Gersh Park. And so they're very involved. Daniel's on our board. He was the president when I was hired. He hired me, and they're wonderful people, without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Lynn?
I'm just curious a little bit about your administrative structure, like how many people on your board, who they are, where your office is located, and do you have any other staff?
Sure. Okay, so my office is in the park. I'm in the maintenance building. It's nothing fancy, but it does the job. I have a staff right now of three. Everyone is part-time except for me. We use the model to outsource our maintenance as well. So I'm not dealing with HR issues from, you know, the crews of guys that are, you know, cutting the grass and maintaining the facilities. We contract with Kitson Landscapes and Nomura Yamasaki as well. Board-wise, I think right now we have 13. It's made up of all sorts of different kinds of people that are, you know, community-minded, but we have soccer folks, we have baseball folks, we have dog folks, you know, people that are retired UCSB administrators. I mean, you name it. It's an entire spectrum of, you know, working class people that have gotten together to, you know, keep everything running.
How often do you meet?
We meet once a month. We have a couple of different committees as well, so we're constantly meeting and talking, and we have city representation with our liaisons. So it seems to be a very healthy situation. We're constantly looking for new board members, and we seem to get one or two every other year, which keeps things going, gets fresh faces in there. In fact, I think we are looking right now for another board member to fill an open slot. So it's a pretty solid group of folks.
If you wanted to attend a meeting, do you have a website or something to know when the meetings are?
Contact me. We meet on the third Tuesday of the month at the park in the community room at noon. Okay. But if you let me know, I can, you know, make sure that you can get the agenda, et cetera.
Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I live right over there, so I'm always curious about it. And I know how popular it is with the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have a, you know, curiosity because it's so immediate. I just live two blocks from there.
Great. Yeah, come on over.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Richards.
Yeah, I had a question. Well, first of all, thank you for the reference to the rec needs assessment. That that certainly was an important process for us and a guiding document, you know, in terms of the city's needs in this area. And you mentioned, you made reference to the off-leash dog parks, and I appreciate that because we've heard that before, and I, you know, hopefully that can stay on our agenda. And you also made reference to skate park on there as a need, and clearly you've heard that as well. Is there any possibility that that might be something that you would be have the real estate for, or when it, you noted it on here, is that just to make sure that we are aware of that, or is there some role that you could see yourself playing?
Well, we do not have the real estate. All of our grass fields are used, most of the year. It would be very difficult. And we need a pretty large area to do this right. I'm stating that it's an absolute need. I worked at the Santa Barbara Skate Park for a summer. I'm not a skater, but I get it. It's a huge need in the community. Love to find a way to partner, even if it's just volunteering time to help put something together. There's been a ton of dialogue about different locations over the years. And, you know, I think we need to continue that dialogue and find a piece of property. I know there are people out there, and there is a nonprofit entity that has said that they can raise money for it. Let's leverage resources and, you know, do it with multiple entities involved.
Okay, thanks. And I had another question regarding, you know, the drought and your water usage. Can you tell us a little bit about what, you know, water-saving measures we've taken and how successful they've been?
Sure. So the synthetic turf field is the number one prime example. And obviously we put that in 2008 when there wasn't a drought, but we've felt the positive effects of installing that over the years. We have embraced Kikuyu grass, which actually doesn't need as much water as some of the other varieties that, you know, you can grow in an athletic situation. Kikuyu is not ideal for professional stadiums, et cetera. But honestly, in our really terrible Goleta clay, it's the only thing that'll grow. And right now we're getting a lot of growth because of the long days. We've also capped, I think the number now is 130 sprinklers in areas that are not athletic fields. And we're using mulch basically to keep those areas in good, decent condition. That translates into a savings of 500,000 gallons of reclaimed water, which it's not a hugely significant number, but, you know, it does help. But the bottom line is, you know, we do need to use a lot of water, and essentially all of our irrigation is reclaimed water. And I've been told by the water district that if we run out of reclaimed water, we're really in trouble because absolutely no one's using water. So, you know, we're doing whatever we can, without a doubt.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Commissioner West.
Just one other thing. Would you be so kind to let the city staff know if you hear about future skateboard park meetings or dog park meetings coming up in the community, and then they could let us know? I can, speaking for myself, I can tell you that when we were working on the Kellogg Park and all the wondrous numbers of families from Old Town who came, you know, about the skateboard park and all the skaters and the architects from LA who do nothing but design skateboard parks. That was a really thrilling thing, I think, for us to work on. And I would love to help advocate for, you know, so many of the older skateboarders were saying they respect that they have to build a small one for little kids in Old Town, but they were really quite passionate about wanting one built for them in the city. And I would love to see that it really comes to fruition. So if you ever hear about anything more, would you let us know?
Sure, absolutely. And
great.
And the folks that I've talked to have requested multiple skate parks. So, you know, let's get a good one under our belts and see where that goes. But yeah, I'll definitely let you know if there's any discussion.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks to Ryan and Gersh Park for the great partnership that we have with you, and between the Gersh and the city. It's really great to see a real gem in the community that's so popular and so well utilized. I heard really a lot of positive feedback from the 4th of July, the Goleta Noontime Rotary 4th of July show that was held there, with lots of people coming out and really having a great time. So it's really almost a year-round facility that lots of people in the community go to and have a great time with the kids and families and everybody out there. So it's really great to have. It's a real gem in the community. Our next item for the commission tonight, a presentation from the Santa Barbara County Food Bank, and Mr. Lee Sherman is here to go through the PowerPoint for you. So again, welcome, and we are looking forward to good discussion and lots of questions. And again, thank you for being here tonight. I know you coordinate with our staff on this.
Thanks for having me. Is it the last one? Here we go. Boom. Okay. Thanks for having me. Cecilia invited me. I've been here before, also at the behest of Claudia for city council meetings when we get to, we do get funding and CDBG funding. I'm the grant manager for the food bank. I handle all of our community block development grants for all the different cities in the county that we work, different cities within the county and the county's entire overall program. This is kind of a big overview of the food bank. I'm not sure how much of it is going to be relevant to everybody as Parks and Rec, you know, related material. So I might breeze through some of this stuff, but please feel free to stop me and ask questions if you have them. Food bank's been around, serving Santa Barbara County since 1982. We work independently. We operate from two different warehouses. We have one in Santa Maria and one here in Goleta off Hollister at the Georgia Page Youth Center. We also are a member of the National Organization of Food Banks Feeding America. It's over 300 food banks nationwide. And we are also a member of the statewide California Association of Food Banks that allows us to connect with and learn from our peers and find out about new programs and best practices that are being adopted within our industry. And we also work with 300 partner agencies within the county, including food pantries, churches, schools, YMCAs and Boys and Girls Clubs. So, as part of the network of Feeding America, they did a study called Hunger in America. It was a survey, actually, of the people that we serve in Santa Barbara County. And just to give you some of the stats on what other people are experiencing here, not just in Goleta, but countywide, an estimated 75% of households were food insecure, which meant kind of having to choose between perhaps paying rent or mortgage or paying for a doctor's visit or having your car fixed over buying food. You know, that's how tight the budgets are for many people in Santa Barbara County. 47% had no health insurance. 60% reported, just what I had to say there, paying for food or paying for rent or mortgage in the last year. And an estimated 21% of households reported at least one member with diabetes. So we are really trying to not only end hunger in the county, but improve the health of the people we serve through good nutrition. One more statistic for you. This comes from the County Board of Supervisors' snapshot of poverty from 2013. One in every five children, one in every five adults, and one in every 14 seniors are living at or below the poverty level in this county. And we're here to help that. We're here to help not only alleviate food insecurity, but to transform the health of our community through good nutrition. That model involves expanding our programming to empower community leaders to adopt and run our programs, many of which involved pairing food distribution, emergency food distribution, with nutrition education and food literacy, as well as kitchen training, kitchen skills training. You know, if someone were to hand you a cassava melon or a rutabaga, perhaps you wouldn't know exactly what to do with it unless you had some recipe or some guidance or instruction on how it's cooked and what recipes it goes in. So that's part of what we're trying to do. You know, the old cliche, instead of giving a man a fish, teach him to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime. We're not a Band-Aid on an insolvable problem. We have a clear pathway towards our ultimate destination, which is a healthy and hunger-free Santa Barbara County. It's this little pathway here. You guys can feel free to get out your magnifying glasses and look at that later if you want. We've been serving the county for 30 years, over 30 years now, 1982, 34, just about. We're the largest nonprofit distribution network serving the entire county. We source food from all over the western United States, some donated, much of it purchased. We procure, receive, and store healthy, nutritious food and then distribute it safely countywide. Safety is a big thing with food safety. We have to adhere to a lot of regulations on storage and transport and things like that. Santa Maria Warehouse opened in 2006 after a big capital campaign. It covers over 21,000 square feet. It's different from our southern county warehouse because we have loading docks for tractor trailers there that they can back right up, and we can just unload it right into the facility, and then we kind of repackage and repallet it and redistribute it, some of it south to the South County warehouse, where we unload it via pallet jack. We don't have the ability to back them right up and load them in, so it's a little less efficient, but we're looking at ways to improve that. Our Goleta warehouse occupies a former fire station. Over the past few years, we've made several customizations and improvements to increase efficiency and bring our organization to compliance with new food safety rules, which are set by the AIB, which stands for, it took me a minute too,
Agriculture?
Association of International Bakers.
Oh my.
They set the food safety standards for like how long your cheese can be out of the fridge or how long that milk can sit in the creamer on the table and not, you know, cause a risk. They set the standards for all that stuff. And I got a grant through Feeding America for about $20,000 to make improvements to this facility, which mostly had to do with sealing the overhead doors and certain things in our cooling area. But yeah, it was a learning experience for me. Glad I could share it. Because of our commitment to improved health through good nutrition, we've set a goal that half of all food we distribute consists of fresh fruits and vegetables, many of which are locally sourced and distributed through our direct-to-client programs. All agencies and all clients receive our fresh produce free of charge. Most agencies have a nominal handling fee for things like protein and baked goods, but everything else is pretty much free, and all of our produce and vegetables are free. And I don't know if anybody here has participated in our gleaning program. We have the Backyard Bounty.
Oh, you do have that.
Yeah.
I've picked my own and dropped them off at your place. Somebody will pick them for me?
How many of you have?
Just one tree.
You know, we usually, big groups go out for big picks, you know, nice. Full orchards and things like that. Yeah. You know, if it's one tree, we ask if you could to handle that yourself. We do appreciate
it. It's prolific,
though.
It's
great. What kind of tree?
It's an orange tree.
Orange tree. Great.
For those of us who aren't familiar, can you describe what you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So gleaning, our Backyard Bounty program, and there's more information on our website. Gleaning is basically trying to divert food waste. You know, people who can't access all the fruit on their trees. You know, here in Southern California, we have many properties that have orchards, citrus trees, avocados, lemons, tangerines, things like that. Many people who have those trees on their property don't pick and eat all that fruit. And sometimes it left to rot on the tree. It can attract vermin, like rats that climb up there. It can, you know, sometimes you need some help. And that food can always go to a good place. So we accept food from single trees, like Mr. Hart here. I've gone to a pick where we went to an estate in Montecito whose driveway was lined with lemon trees, and we, you know, picked all those lemons. We have corporate volunteer programs where we take them up to Driscoll's. Will call us and say, hey, we've got this whole field of lettuce or something, celery like that, that we need to turn over, and you guys are welcome to it if you can come out here and pick it. And so we have a full-time now coordinator for this program. It was kind of a part-time job, but she's just done such a great job, works well over 40 hours a week doing this stuff. So and it's a pretty great way to give back to your community and like I said, prevent food waste and that kind of stuff from happening. Just a quick list, as I mentioned, if you're giving out free emergency food in the county, you're pretty much getting it from us. We support over 300 local nonprofits that are doing food service programs. And that's big. Through that, we serve nearly 1 in 4 people in the county. I'll talk to a little bit about our initiative areas that we're trying to focus on, you know, not just giving out the food, but trying to address some of the root causes of why people are hungry and the nutritional problems and related diseases they can have due to hunger. We have our childhood hunger and nutrition, which I'll focus on a little more later. I think of relevance to you guys will be our Picnic in the Park program. But just to let you know, 35% of the clients we serve are children. We do a lot of work through after-school programs, and we do a summer feeding program when schools aren't in session, like now. And we try to pair that with food literacy, nutrition education, and kind of get kids interested in nutrition now, you know, so that they can make good choices for themselves in the future once they're empowered to make those choices. Seniors are another big area of focus for us. We serve our Brown Bag program serves about 1,200 very low-income elderly people who struggle to pay for housing and healthcare basic needs. Our average Brown Bag client is a 75-year-old woman who's living on less than $900 a month. So, you know, getting 2 bags of groceries every 2 weeks is really great for some of these people. Yes?
Are those all located at the Community Action Commission senior nutrition sites throughout the county is where the Brown Bag programs are?
Off the top of my head, I know we do some there. We also have them at Presidio Springs. We have them at the HUD senior housing, and we're also starting to do in the North County mobile food distributions where we kind of bring like a food truck. We were hitting Guadalupe and in some of the more unincorporated areas like that. Yeah, thank you. That's a program that I've gone and observed and just really enjoyed it, had a great time with the people there. It's also provides a really great social outlet. Every 2 weeks, you go out, you get your bag of food, you talk to the other people, and you know, it's pretty fun. And we're also trying to pair that with some of our Grow Your Own Way program, which is a gardening instruction. We distribute seeds and help people. Which this one woman I was talking to, she loved it. She was like, you know, I remember when I was a little girl, we had a victory garden, and it was like, oh, that's, you don't hear that very often nowadays. It's pretty cool. Helping families feed themselves. We focus on providing the food and skills to help families through tough economic times through our Healthy School Pantry, our Grow Your Own Way program. I'm getting ahead of myself here. And then we also have, you know, just the pairing of food literacy, nutrition education, and getting people more involved in making healthier choices, including exercise and eating better foods. Because, you know, what we see when we're talking about poor nutrition or malnutrition in Santa Barbara County, obviously you're not seeing kids walking around with their rib cages sticking out and distended bellies because they're at that level of hungry. We're talking about increased rates of things like diabetes, obesity in kids, and you know, it's kind of an interesting paradox where you can have poor nutrition, but yet at the same time you're overweight. Yeah, a lot of the choices we make, you know, sometimes the least expensive food is definitely not the healthiest food. You know, you rely on highly processed foods that are high in fat, sugar, and salt, and that gets you through and gets you your calories, but not a lot of people have time to cook healthy. Not a lot of people have the resources to buy expensive produce, you know. And if you've shopped for produce at a place like Whole Foods or something like that, you know, it can be pretty tough. Mm-hmm. So by teaching our kids in these children's programs how to make good choices, how to be physically active, we can lower their risk of developing diabetes by 90%. As adults, they can experience an 80% decrease in the risk of heart disease and stroke. And diet-sensitive cancers, such as breast cancer, colon cancer, and prostate cancer, I was surprised to learn, all related to diet in some way. So it's another benefit of, you know, getting kids early. It could mean, you know, pretty significant healthcare costs in the future for cities and communities. And that's where we have our Feed the Future programs as part of our Children's Health Initiative. It draws upon the theory that by providing access to nutritious foods throughout all stages of childhood, we can influence quality health outcomes, serving as a preventative health mechanism in order to bring about long-term positive health. And some of those programs are food literacy in preschool. We start them early. And this is really fun. We use colorful, age-appropriate, interactive lessons to promote nutritious eating and physical activity. They usually include a storytelling and a tasting and samples for the kids and stuff like that. And we always send kids home with a generous sample of the fruit or vegetable that we're highlighting for that lesson, along with a parent newsletter filled with cooking tips, recipes, and nutrition information. We're active in all the preschools in Carpinteria. We're working with this program now, I think it's 2 years, at the Storyteller Preschool Centers in downtown and on Della Vina and at the CAC Head Start. And we also have our Kids Farmers Market. This one's also at the Goleta Valley Boys and Girls Club. This is like an after-school program that has fresh produce and nutrition education for elementary kids at YMCAs. The ACEs, the after-school education and safety programs, run them. More, you know, age-appropriate but hands-on food demonstrations. Children get to prepare and taste the recipe of the day. And it concludes with a mini farmer's market that includes the main ingredient as well as three other fresh produce items. And each kid takes home about 8 pounds of produce to their family for participating in this program. Our Healthy School Pantry, and this is for kids and parents together. It's kind of designed like a health fair. Instead of just lining up and getting a bag of food, you kind of wind around that the next one? Yeah. There's kind of a flow chart of here. You know, you sign up, you taste the recipe. And then we also have the distribution of not only food items, but other things that we get, like diapers and wipes and things like that. Formula, powdered, you know, infant formula and things like that. Just things that beyond just produce, but other real staples that can help struggling families. And we also partner with other organizations. We have the Master Gardeners come and give demonstrations. We have Santa Barbara Neighborhood Clinics come and do finger pricks to test for diabetes and things like that. So we kind of try to unify a bunch of different services. We also do CalFresh outreach. Santa Barbara ranks, I think, out of the 58 counties, I think we're like 51st in the level of CalFresh enrollment, which is low. I mean, we could be doing a lot better, a lot more people. I think there's 75,000 people eligible for CalFresh, which is the SNAP program or food stamps in California, and barely 30,000 are actually enrolled in the program. For whatever reason, but you know, we try to include that in this healthy school pantry. We just opened a new one downtown at the Harding Elementary on the west side, and I'm not sure if we run this one in Goleta. We do run it at the Goleta Valley Community Center. Yeah, yes.
How do families know about that? I mean, these are such wonderful programs. How do they know about it?
Sure, yeah. A lot of them are hosted at schools or place, you know, these are kind of aimed at kids, but it's kind of like, here, get your parents involved. And these take place after school at a convenient time, usually when parents are coming to pick up the kids. And we do have program coordinators that are not only responsible for getting the program out there, getting it adopted by a new site, getting everyone trained, but also doing the outreach. Yeah. So whenever we open a new one, we do a little, we try to get as much press as we can and you know, get KUIT and news press and things like that to come out. And then there are always bilingual flyers that are up on school bulletin boards, or in the case of the community center, their bulletin board. But, you know, word of mouth helps, too. Tell your friends. And then we move along the continuum to teens. Teens love cooking. I don't have a teenager. I have a tweener. I can get him to make
these?
A bowl of cereal, but I'm not sure if that's – we'll go as far to say he loves cooking.
These aren't teens I've met.
Exactly. Actually, there is a pretty cool culinary program that we've been partnering with, and I just got a grant this year. They're based in Montecito, and it's a mouthful, but the Julia Child Institute for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts, I believe I got that right, just gave us $5,000 to support this program because they believe in the getting sharp knives into the hands of teenagers, which is how you get them involved in the program here. Pretend this tomato is whatever you want. And yeah, exactly. It's a 7-week program after school for teens. It teaches them kitchen skills. And at the end of the 7 weeks, they've learned a lot, and they cook a full meal. And their parents are invited to come and experience it, and, you know, just give them something to be proud of. I could cook this. And like I was saying before, you know, a lot of families, many of them were working multiple jobs. People don't have time to cook. Some of them don't have the knowledge to cook, especially with healthy ingredients that, you know, you need to cook an eggplant for a while, or, you know, to get it to taste well, or just certain things that people don't want to be bothered with. You're trying to get their interest and get them interested in making those choices and healthier choices for themselves. And this is at Carpinteria Middle School, La Cumbre Junior High, and El Camino Junior High in Santa Maria. And then we have our Picnic in the Park program, which is running, I think it's at 15 sites this year. I think we're up last year from 12. We're definitely up from, I'm not sure the numbers, but I think it's about 15 or 16. And these are summer feeding programs for kids who are, it's mostly located in areas where there's a high rate of children in the it's the federal program, the free and reduced price meal program. So schools that have a high rate of enrollment in that, we partner with them, or we try to find parks that are, you know, some schools do stay open and offer this, but for those that don't, we try to step in and fill that gap, and we are serving 50,000 meals this year. That's, you know, usually an hour a day, any kid under 18. We have a few sites where parents are allowed to purchase a meal for at cost, you know, very cheaply, so they can sit and eat with their kids. And it's, I enjoy it. I go to see it, and I write the grants for this program. I also have to audit it, so I go and check it out. And you know, it's great to see the kids. We have lots of fun activities for them. They have this passport to prizes where they can get all these stickers if they've done these things, and then get a, you know, kind of prize at the end of the program. We also have, I don't know if you've ever seen our bicycle blender, which is another way we try to incorporate the physical exercise. I want to get one for my own home too. But it's a stationary bike that has a blender attachment on the back, and the kids load in the ingredients, and somebody gets on there and pedals, and they make a smoothie or some cool salsa or something like that. It's pretty neat. And that, I'm not sure. I know we're running also at the Goleta Valley Community Center, I believe. Yes.
Where are the meals prepared? That's a lot of meals each day.
It is a lot of meals. Yeah, we contract with different providers. We have volunteers come and help sometimes. I don't know if you've ever been to one of our volunteer things, but oftentimes it involves, you know, having a 100-pound bag of rice and putting that all into 1-pound, you know, bags or something like that. We do subcontract for many of these meals. There is volunteer help in delivering and distributing them. But yeah, we also get a slight reimbursement. It's a USDA program, so we do get reimbursed for the price of the meals to it. And they also have to conform to USA standards of protein, vegetable, dairy, and fruit. And I've gone and I've seen kids eat a whole thing of cucumbers like that. I was like, wow, I got to show my kids. He did it and lived. So that's about it. This kind of gives you an idea of how we're coming together around the issues of food security and healthy eating. You know, if you guys are interested, as the Parks and Recs Commission, is hosting any of these programs, you can contact us. Our program coordinator can work with you on setting up, you know, any one of these kids programs or whatever you'd like. And are there any questions?
Commissioner West.
I'm sorry. I'm so used to doing
it. Commissioner Hanson.
I'm very impressed. First of all, I had no idea all these programs that you did. So thank you very much for this.
Oh, absolutely.
This really good report. It seems like you already have a number of collaborations within Goleta also, like at the Goleta Valley Community Center.
Most of them are with the Goleta Valley Community Center. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Are there I wanted to ask, are there particular like holes or gaps that you see in your ability to serve Goleta that, you know, that if you were to, you know, if we were to partner in more ways, what would you identify?
You know, I would probably refer that to one of our program staff. We have on our website, it's called a Guide to Nutrition Programs, and that kind of overlays census data with poverty data and stuff like that, and helps us kind of see in shaded areas where they need to be. I think, you know, there's definitely room for more of these programs in Goleta. You know, sounds like some of them would be really cool at Gersh Park too. You know, that would pair up the physical activity part pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then we are also working within a few schools, but yeah, I mean, I almost would. I don't have that information off the top of my head, but if you guys think of something and think of an area that could be better served, please let us know.
We're also, you know, it's been on the table for the city to explore a community garden. Are there other community gardens in other areas that you work with, or is there a model for that?
You know, we don't do the community gardening. We have our Grow Your Own Way program, and that's, like I said, that's big with the seniors who often have, if they're in the HUD housing, they some have, you know, it's about the size of a flat screen TV, but that's your garden plot, you know. We work with them on that. There are grants out there for community gardens, but a lot of them are also school-based, so it's kind of up to the school to set aside that kind of space. We're not an organization that has access to land to really do something like that, so it's more, here's how you do it yourself is kind of our theory on it. But also, as I had mentioned before, the Backyard Bounty program is a great way to get kids out there and climbing trees and using fruit pickers and stuff like that and getting the physical exercise out there.
Ritter, go ahead, Vito.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Richards and members of the commission, staff can be glad to follow up with Mr. Sherman and any of the program staff at
Certainly.
The food bank to get some of the additional information that you've asked and be happy to report back.
Okay. I just wanted to say thank you. Thanks for coming and informing us about these very critical programs. I mean, it's always been close to my heart, hence why I drop off food whenever I think of it for you guys. But those are heartbreaking statistics that you give, and I just always think about it. I've not been hungry in my life, so I don't know what that's like, but I can only imagine it's got to be a big hurdle to get over for people that are struggling with poverty or, like you said, are challenged to get enough food. Before you could even try to pull yourself up, you got to be fed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really. Kudos for the work you're doing. And again, thank you very much for coming and speaking to us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. And yeah, my contact information is with Cecilia and our program coordinator. Her number is on the very last slide if you want to find anything more specific about one of these programs or have a good site recommendation. So she's excited to expand.
Great.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Vito.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, if you'd like to take a five-minute break before we get into the next presentation. Actually, we have a consent calendar item next on your agenda. So if you'd like to take care of that item first, and then if you like, it would be a good time to take maybe a five-minute break right after that before we get into our next presentation.
Sounds
and
good.
Actually, discussion action item with the Department of Public Works.
Okay, so with that, we will move on to the consent calendar item. So has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Are there any changes or comments? Could I get a motion for approval?
I'll move that we accept the minutes as presented to us.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Chair, I have a request actually in this area. I was on the website trying to find minutes from previous meetings, and I'm having difficulty doing that. So I was wondering if we could just ask staff to please make sure that all the minutes are available on the website.
We'd be happy to follow up on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and with that, we'll take a five-minute break. So please be right back in your chairs at 7:10. Thank you. Okay. Ooh. Hang on. Oops, I will wait for the. Well, you beat Commissioner Barsky. We'll move on to item C. Vito?
Good evening again, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. Staff is really pleased tonight to bring to you a presentation by the Department, Ms. Kathy Garcia, the Deputy Public Works Director for the Department, and Ms. Teresa Lopes, the Senior Project Engineer. As the Commission has heard previously, we have a strong partnership, and it's a team approach with the Department of Public Works and other departments here at the city. And so I'm pleased to say it's not the first time we've had the Department of Public Works in front of you to present tonight. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Garcia and Ms. Lopes for the presentation tonight.
I'm Kathy Garcia, Deputy Director of Public Works, and I'm very happy to be here. Those last two presentations are going to be hard to follow, but I hope I'll keep your interest. So we're going to go over most of our projects that are in the next couple of years will be coming, and as well as we're going to be seeking advice and guidance from the commission for a couple of parks projects that are coming along, and we'll talk about those at the end. But I'm going to let Teresa, our senior project engineer, describe most of the projects for you.
Okay. Well, good evening. So we're going to...
Is your microphone on?
I think...
Maybe it just needs to be closer.
Oh, maybe closer. Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to be going over some of our active transportation projects that we have in the works, and starting with a couple projects which are active transportation plans, and they include the City of Goleta Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan. This project is just kicking off. We've had one meeting with the different agencies such as the Santa Barbara County, Coast, SB Bike, City of Santa Barbara, Traffic Solutions, SB CAG. So we've gotten everybody together with the consultant team and had a kickoff meeting. And in the next several months, we'll be starting the public outreach for the project and developing the plan. So that'll be an exciting project as it moves along. What is the Bike Ped Master Plan? So the purpose and goal is to have a comprehensive update to the City of Goleta Bicycle Master Plan, identify gaps and barriers in the bicycle and pedestrian systems, develop a metric and methodology for new projects, and incorporate design guidance into city road standards. So we'll be coming up with some standards for different types of bike facilities and pedestrian facilities and where they would be applicable, and then also encourage walking and biking as viable modes of transportation. Our next plan is the Hollister Avenue Complete Streets Corridor Plan, and this is for the Old Town area of Hollister Avenue. And this project will be developing, looking at alternatives to pretty much turn Hollister Avenue into a complete street project. And that includes looking at ways to provide continuous sidewalks, making ADA, our Old Town ADA, accessible, and providing dedicated bicycle facilities and shared use of roadway. And then also addressing public transit improvements to bus stops, providing benches, lighting, and looking at parking issues, public parking facilities, on-street parking, and also access for deliveries. So the first step of the plan is that we will have a consultant team. We're in the process. We held interviews, and we're ready to bring a consultant team on board. And then they're going to look at the existing facilities and constraints, and then we will be kicking off the public outreach component, where we'll go out to the community and solicit input on the plan. And there will be several public outreach efforts as the project progresses. The goal of the plan is to come up with a future plan for Hollister Avenue, identifying projects which can be implemented, some which can be done now, some which are more intermediate, a few years away, and then others which are bigger and farther off in the future. And let's see. And so I just went over that. So the purpose of the plan, and to come up with a scope, cost, and schedule of these projects, and come up with a matrix of the different projects that would come out of the plan. And that was a project we received Tiger Grant funding for. And now I will move into our various bicycle facility projects. starting off with the Maria Ignacio Bike Path Lighting Project. We are kicking off construction of this project right now. We have a contract awarded to a contractor, and unfortunately there's several weeks lead time to order the lighting fixtures and the materials, so we plan on getting those installed in the next couple months. The San Jose Creek Bike Path Middle Extent Project, that one is a bike path along the San Jose Creek, which extends from Calle Real to Hollister. We've broken the project into two segments. Each segment would have independent utility. Segment one is from Armitos to Hollister. That portion is in final design, and we plan to go to construction with that project along with the park project. And then segment two from Armitos to Calle Real, we're finishing up the environmental phase and moving into preliminary engineering. And that portion of the project also involves coordination with Caltrans and Union Pacific Railroad. And then we have the San Jose Creek Bike Path Southern Extent Project, which is extending the bike path from Hollister to the south to Sandspit Road. And a portion of the bike path, our current preliminary design is to have it run along Highway 217. Caltrans is currently in preliminary design to replace the 217 bridge over the San Jose Creek, so we are working with Caltrans to make sure that when they replace that bridge that it's wide enough to accommodate our Class 1 bike path. And again, we're in preliminary design on this project. Next, we have the Hollister Class 1 bike path project, and this is the new Class 1 bike path from, I'll call it Class 1 / multi-purpose path because it's bike and pedestrian, from Pacific Oaks to Elwood Elementary School, located along the south side of Hollister Avenue. And we are going out to bid with this project this week. Construction will either begin this fall, or we are going to the California Transportation Commission in August to request a extension on the construction to next spring so that we can line up the construction for when school is out for the summer. There's a concern with having the kids commuting back and forth to school through a construction site, so hopefully we can get that extension. And if we do get the extension, then we will plan to go to construction next spring, 2017. The Ward Drive Class 2 bike path project. So this is installing Class 2 bike paths along both sides of Ward Drive from Hollister down to the terminus and connecting that to the Auburn Trail. And this project is currently in design, and we anticipate design being complete early fall, and then we'll proceed into construction. And the La Patera project. Currently, we don't have funding for this project. We did apply for an ATP grant, and this project would provide sidewalks along both sides of La Patera from Hollister to the train depot, and then also provide Class 2 bike lanes along both sides, which will help people who are currently walking from Hollister, where the bus drops them off, down to the train depot, and you see them walking in the middle of the street pulling their luggage and such. So we did apply for an ATP grant. Hopefully we will be successful with that. And then there's the Cathedral Oaks Class 1 / multi-use path. This project, again, we are currently pursuing funding on, so it's a future project which hasn't begun yet. Okay, and now I'm going to go into some of our sidewalk infill projects and pedestrian projects. So the pedestrian path and lighting project at the Boys and Girls Club. This is the project that's currently in construction right now at the Goleta Valley Community Center. And what the project is doing is removing existing fencing at the front and rear parking lots, installing lighting. The project will establish vegetation and reestablish, I don't know what that means, install parking blocks and a paved pathway. And so here is a picture of the construction that is currently taking place.
If I could, for the commission, Mr. Chair and members of the commissioners, this pathway is used frequently by the boys and girls who are going to the Boys and Girls Club at the very far end. If you could scroll back to the previous slide.
Sure.
So this area along this pathway that leads from the Boys and Girls Club all the way to Hollister Avenue is not very well lit. We've received reports in the past from parents and children that, and we've also talked to the Boys and Girls Club about trying to enhance the safety and make it safer and make it easier for people to get through this area. So this this is really an important project for all those people who use the Boys and Girls Club, who cross the crosswalk there at Hollister and go through this pathway. So we really think this will really help make things safer and really improve the access there across that area for all the boys and girls who are going to the Boys and Girls Club and anybody else who's going there through that pathway.
Can you just clarify? Thank you for that, because I was a little disoriented with this map. Is that pathway to the west of the community center? Is
it's
that right?
The very western, it's the western really property line,
okay.
Because on the other side is the apartment complex. There's a chain link fence that runs along this area. So on one side is the apartment complex, and then on the other side is the Boys and Girls Club. And so that is really, I think it's right on the westernmost property line of the community center. So it's right there. If you blinked, if you were on Hollister and you were walking past it or you were driving, if you blinked, you'd miss it. But it's really important that this is done to really enhance the safety. And it also just is an important project for getting people across that area.
Vito, can I just ask, it really has little to do with probably what's relevant here, but is there ever any discussion at any of the meetings in terms of the Goleta Valley Community Center, the coming out and the driving patterns of pulling out, going right or left? It's I'm there pretty frequently. It's pretty difficult to come out and go left, which is...
There was some discussion as there was a traffic study done when we were looking at the Civic Center development. Off and on, we do get calls from people asking about the circulation, because there's that horseshoe in the front of the community center,
right,
coming in and out. And then when you're trying to get out on the Hollister, if you're, some people try to make the left-hand turn across the two lanes going the other way, which is sometimes challenging. I think our public works staff is well aware.
And also, traffic patterns will be analyzed with the Complete Streets project. So, we'll
so there you have
too.
It. See?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on that.
Yeah.
It's an important project.
And one project also that's going to construction in the next couple months, and I don't believe we have a slide for it, is the hawk signal for the crossing in front of the community center there. So you'll see that improvement happening in the next 2 months or so. It's ready to go to construction. Okay, and then I'm just gonna touch on some sidewalk infill projects that most of them we received Measure A grants for, and we will be going into construction with these in the next couple of years. So we have the sidewalk infill on Fairview to Stowe Canyon Road. So that's right in front of where the farm is located, and we'll be installing sidewalks. So we continue the sidewalk. It'll be continuous all the way up to Stowe Canyon Road, and that's a Measure A grant we received for design and construction. And then we also have the project at Fairview, Kyrial, and the 101 intersection, the 101 ramps. This is a difficult area, and a difficult area for pedestrians because what they're doing currently is they come off of South Fairview, they go down that, if you're familiar with a pedestrian bicycle kind of ramp, and then you see kids running across the street there to get to the shopping area across Kyrial, and it's a difficult location in that there's a lot of traffic there. There's four lanes, and then it's also right after a blind curve for people coming from going towards Fairview. And so what this first project to help alleviate some of that is to close that ramp and actually continue the sidewalk to come down South Fairview and then have pedestrians just go all the way down to the signal and along that route. So it's an intermediate project while we look at other alternatives for a permanent way to get people across there.
All right, this is really close to home, so I'm a little confused. So you're going to close that ramp and ask them to walk all the way around the...
Yeah. And that's to avoid the dashing across the street there. And we're looking at other alternatives, like how can we get people safely from across that location? Where could we possibly put a crossing, a hawk signal or something? And so while that's taking place, we saw this as an opportunity to kind of deter that behavior.
And is that, you're saying, a short-term solution? Is there an idea to reopen that path? I use that path quite a bit, actually, myself, on my bike and walking.
Yeah, we're looking at options. It's kind of a difficult situation because you do have that blind curve. So if you put some type of hawk signal there or rapid flashing beacon or something to have a mid-block crossing, it's difficult for traffic coming around and coming up on it. So we're looking at some options. One option is even maybe if we did a pedestrian overcrossing all the way and have it touch down.
That would be ideal.
Center. So that's mm-hmm. a big project. And so we're looking at this as an interim kind of fix to keep people from coming down and running across, because you never see anybody go down to the signal like they should, even though there's a sign
no.
saying, you know, do not cross.
So I'm a little concerned, though. I probably have to count me in it, too. Is there going to be sufficient barriers to prevent somebody from forcing that ramp access down? Because you're asking them to walk probably an additional quarter mile if it's a walker. Mm-hmm. If it's a bike person, not too big a deal, but I'm concerned that somebody's going to try to just go down that little embankment regardless.
Yeah, and actually, if you've been out there, you've noticed a lot of people don't even bother going as far to go to the ramp, but they go down the slope. And when I was out there taking pictures, I saw several people doing that. They just go over the guardrail and down the slope, and actually when they do that, where they end up crossing is a lot more visible than where they're using.
But my question is there going to be adequate impediment to
yes.
preventing somebody from doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
We would install fencing to keep that.
Will there be more opportunity for community input on this, or is this has this already been decided, the plans for this?
Only in concept to apply for the grant, and so we haven't even begun preliminary engineering. So once we get the cooperative agreement, accept the grant funds, then we'll begin preliminary engineering on this. So the answer to that question would be yes.
I mean, I'll speak as a bicyclist that the intersection that's not on this
you know, drawing right here off to the side, which is where the freeway entrance and off-ramp are, it is something I avoid at all costs because that's like one of the most dangerous intersections in the city, I would say, that, you know, because there actually isn't even a bike lane at that point. You're having to drive right in traffic. And I mean, this at least provides a less than ideal alternative, though.
If I can dovetail on that, so is the expectation that a bicyclist would be on the sidewalk to navigate around?
Well, we would be looking at actually putting in Class 2 bike lanes so that they continue through that area.
But again, if you close that path, that would, so we're going to have this interim period before the Class 2. Is that correct?
No, the Class 2 would be part of this project.
So before you'd close it, you would have a Class 2 option for the bikes.
That's what we're looking at. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult area. This project is a sidewalk infill project on Magnolia in Old Town, where there's currently a short section where there's vehicles parking and there's no sidewalk there. And another future project is to install sidewalk along Calle Real from La Patera to Los Canaros Road. Currently, there's no sidewalk in that area, and you do see people walking along the shoulder through there. And then we have a much larger sidewalk infill project, which is the Old Town sidewalk infill, and that is looking at the streets on the northern side of Hollister in the Old Town area and identifying where there's sidewalk missing, where sidewalk can be installed, and it's looking at all the streets in that area. We've completed the preliminary design and are just now beginning the design portion of that project. And there will be community meetings and public outreach involved with this one, since it will have effects on the neighborhood.
In general, is the addition of new sidewalks going to reduce the number of parking spaces? Because I know that that's a premium in that area.
Yeah, it's being looked at case by case. And the idea is to make sure that there's continuous sidewalk on at least one side of the street, and then also dealing, you see all kinds of parking through there. Some is head-in parking, some is parallel parking, so that's being considered.
And actually, this project is going to be going on the same time as the Hollister Complete Streets, so we're going to be working with this project too, and part of that project is analyzing the parking situation.
And along with the Bike Ped Master Plan. So yeah, all three of them are kind of going to be going at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I'm going to hand it back over to Kathy for the miscellaneous park improvement project.
So right now, the Evergreen Park tennis court is getting refurbished. And here is the picture of where the tennis courts are. They've been dilapidated and unsafe and been closed for quite a long time. So we actually are in construction right now, and they're going to be ribbon cutting on August 10th. So that's that's a good project. Now, the next four projects are the ones we're going to be looking to you, to the commission for assistance and working with to scope out exactly what is the best thing to do. There's a miscellaneous parks. There's actually four. I don't have a picture of Winchester 1, but it's Andamar Park, San Miguel Open Space, Winchester 1, and Winchester 2 parks. The playground equipment is disintegrating, and we have funding to replace the playground equipment. So we were hoping that maybe through Vito we can get a meeting set up and we can kind of kick off and get some ideas flowing. But we have money and we're ready to go with at least two locations this year and then add another one next year. So we'll probably, and then one the following year. So we're really looking forward to that. Yes.
I just wanted to say that is so great.
Good.
You know, a couple years ago or three, I don't know how many years ago, we went and we had the tour of those parks. Those were the things that really stood out to me. So that is so great. And then I know we had a couple of picnic benches that look like if you would sit on, you would be taking your tushy in major jeopardy if you sat on those. And would that be included in here somewhere?
We would include replacing the benches, but the most important thing right now we're looking at is the equipment.
That's great.
Yeah. So hopefully we can, in the very near future, we can get some kind of kickoff meeting and kind of get ideas flowing for that. And, okay, then the last...
The equipment that you're replacing, I'm sorry, what kind of age group or what is the...
That's what we can talk about.
Okay, that's still open?
That's,
okay.
Yeah. Okay, and the last project is the Rancho La Patera improvements. It's in design right now, and that's going to be adding 3 fire hydrants, a permanent restroom facility, and the upgrades to the parking lot. So that's in design right now. So hopefully in the next... several months we'll be able to get that project in construction also. And I think that's about it. So we're looking forward to working with the commission and getting these parks, getting better equipment for them. Well,
thank you very much for that presentation. Are there questions?
Sure.
Commissioner Tolis, you've been wondering.
I don't know what happened there. Sorry. I don't think I did.
I believe that's your welcoming horn.
Yeah, I actually did have a few questions regarding the Old Town sidewalk infill. Would this be taken in phases where it'd be like one area would be worked on and then like after that is done, another one would be started? Or would it be like multiple areas being done at the same time or like very closely, like in time period wise?
You see on the map, that's the
it's a big chunk of area.
That's the area, and it will be a one project for that whole area of the
at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man!
Well,
all right.
You know, I mean, they have to do one sidewalk at a time, but that's the whole project area right there.
Yeah, and I would like to say thank you for like starting this, just because I live in Old Town and I walk around a lot, especially mm-hmm. with my little sister. In which sometimes I kind of get scared when there's cars around because mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no actual sidewalk, and like. You know, like, there's no actual sidewalk and cars coming, like, all over the place sometimes. And it's like, all right, I don't know if I'll just carry her just to be absolutely safe, you know. Because with kids, you never know sometimes.
The preliminary engineering has already been done, and we're going to be going into the design phase in the next couple months. And then looking at construction in 2018.
Can I ask a general question? How is the prioritization of these projects determined? Is it mainly a funding-driven thing, or?
We have a 5-year capital improvement program, and they were prioritized in different ways, one with the circulation element of the general plan, and it also has to do with funding also. So combination of several things.
Thank you. Other questions? Commissioner Richards.
Yeah, I had a question regarding the Hollister Avenue Complete Streets program. It was one of your earlier slides when you were talking about pedestrians and bicyclists and what kind of improvements it would be around that. And in particular, under bicyclists, you had listed dedicated bicycle facilities, which I was kind of curious what that entailed, and then shared use of the roadway. Yeah.
I've never heard that before. Do you want to answer that? Okay.
You're over your time limit, Commissioner Richards.
I'll try to make this short. So in particular, I wanted to know what the facilities were that entailed. And then, it was the one that you just had. Yeah. And then it says shared use of the roadway. And I wanted to clarify what that meant because I didn't know if that meant that you've already discarded the idea of having a dedicated Class 2 bicycle lane. I know that's a big deal. That's like one of the only stretches along the whole corridor of from Stearns Wharf, you know, up through Bacara, where there's not a dedicated Class 2 bicycle lane. And I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, the goal is to have bike lanes through there, whether it's class twos or whether there's some plan. We could come up with a plan for doing some type of a separated bike facility. For the shared use of the roadway, right now you see they have your typical Sharrow markings. And one project that we plan to do immediately and in the next several months that we did receive some grant funding for is to install a greenback Sharrows through that area to move bicyclists right now away from the car door zone, and then also the greenback Sharrows are a little more visible for vehicles and bicyclists. So that's one thing we plan to do right now. And as we go through the process with the Complete Streets Corridor plan, we'll be looking at a slew of different options based on the public outreach and input from the other agencies and getting some ideas of what we can do to fit everything in. So mm-hmm. the goal is separated okay. bike facilities. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
I would also like to ask, what does ADA accessible and pedestrians section mean?
Okay, so that's for American with Disabilities. Yeah.
American with Disabilities Act.
Act, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we've done a Safe Routes for Seniors study through that area, and what came out, and I think anybody who tries to walk through that area is that it's very difficult if you have a disability to just access the businesses, because the way the elevation differences are and there are steep slopes through the Old Town area. So that's another goal of the plan, is to make sure that it's accessible to all users.
Commissioner Richards?
Yeah, I also wanted to make note of the San Jose Bike Creek path program. I'm very excited about that. I think that will be a huge improvement, not only to Old Town Goleta, but also to connecting it to the other side of the freeway and, you know, increasing those connections both ways. I'm aware that you had applied in June for an ATP grant. Is that correct?
Well, we're going to. This was a project that, due to priorities, was put a little lower, and actually the grant did not get in for this cycle, but it's definitely going for next cycle, and then also the next cycle of Measure A grant funding, and we're looking at other grants as well.
Can you explain how that got deprioritized? I remember the city council budget meeting where I thought that was at the top of the list, actually.
Well, we looked at our resources and which projects had better eligibility to be awarded the grant. And part of an ATP grant is in a disadvantaged community, and we felt that other projects were probably more attractive to get funding. So that's why we'll go for other types of funding for this project.
And so what were those projects?
The La Patera sidewalk and sidewalk infill and class 2 bike lanes, and then also the sidewalk and class 2 bike lanes for the Equal project, the Equal Hollister project. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if, you know, disadvantaged communities is one of the priorities or one of the criteria, I mean, I think Old Town and connecting Old Town to the other side of the freeway, I think you have a really good argument there, and I'm really disappointed to hear that was not included in this round.
Yeah, I am too.
Other comments or questions? All right. Well, thank you very much. That really, okay. I feel much more up to speed on some of those really important projects, certainly for the biking and walking community, really critical things. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So we look forward to kickoff meeting with you to start that playground project.
Great. Okay. Look forward to it.
Okay. Oh, I have one last question. I'm sorry. We had heard earlier about dog parks, and I know one of the things that you had mentioned in here was about
parks and improvements. Do you have any suggestions or ideas, or are there any thoughts about what parks we might move toward, you know, to making an off-leash dog park?
I would love to see a dog park here. Vito and I are big dog lovers. I don't know of any dog parks in planning, but
we'd be happy to come back to the volume is down.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to come back to the commission with some of those parks kind of reviews and analyses for the dog park concept.
That would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. With that, we will move on. Director's report. Back to you, Vito.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, for the director's report, we have a few items for you tonight. The first item I wanted to share with you is in your packet. It's the, as you'll recall, in the May meeting, we did the matrix on the fly, and it's now included for you, and it's the table, so it should look like this. If it's in your packet, if you need an extra copy, please let us know. We have additional copies. So we wanted to make sure that you had that matrix. And under the director's items, we have, you've heard, and I know the commission has a lot of interest with what's going on at the community center. And so we had some follow-up items for you. The water and air quality testing by FCG Environmental is complete, and the preliminary results look good in terms of no problems. However, we are waiting for the final report. As soon as we have that, we'll be happy to report back to the commission. So this is part of the air mold lead-based paint testing at the community center that I think you heard me mention a little bit in May. So we wanted to make sure that you received an update on that. Also, on August 10th, we are conducting our historic resource evaluation kickoff with the consultant Page and Turnbull. This evaluation will look at any historical resources at the community center, its status as a historical resource as its building alone, and how those historic resources may affect any future work that's done to the community center, whether it's a complete, you know, rebuild, if we're looking at doing additional ADA access, if we're changing out systems within the community center, to make sure that we're not disturbing any historical resources, and to make sure that it also is consistent with any CEQA, potential CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act, environmental review. This evaluation will take roughly about 2 to 3 months to complete, depending on that initial assessment. So that's another piece of work at the community center. Lastly, with regard to the community center, the consultant contract for hazardous materials and building condition investigation, which includes destructive testing, which is removing lath or drywall to look behind what's visible to the eye, to see what's behind the walls, and looking in the walls, should go forward to the council for award of that contract on September 6th. Staff is currently completing the review of the proposals received, and the selection is pending. So that'll go to the council in September, and we'll have an update for you at the September meeting of this commission. As part of the budget process, the City Council approved a new position called the Park and Recreation Manager. That position is currently under recruitment. It's posted on the city's website. We're pleased to report that the council approved the position, approved the funding, and as the commission will appreciate, with the number of projects that are in the recreation needs assessment, this position will be critical in helping to move many of those projects forward. The application, the first filing, the first initial closing date for that filing for the position is tomorrow, the 28th. So if anyone watching tonight is interested in the position, it's posted on the city's website, and you'll find all the information there available for it. Also, on Saturday, August 20th, is the Dam Dinner event. This is the Lake Los Caneros Dam I'm referring to. It will be from 5 to 7 p.m. It's a free event, and there's additional information on the city's website, www.cityofgoleta.org. And I wanted to share with the commission that there are two commission meetings left in the year. That will be on September 28th and November 30th. It doesn't seem possible that we're already talking about the end of the year, but I did just want to share that with you because time seems to be going really fast this year. And that concludes the items I had for you under the director's report.
Thank you very much. And with that, we move on to future agenda items, which you already noted. We have the next meeting on the 28th. Were there any suggestions, comments for future agenda items?
We have a couple that we wanted to mention and share with you, Mr. Chair and commissioners. We will have the Hollister-Kellogg Park design update and return to the commission. You'll recall that there was the realignment of the bike path around the Sister Witness Tree on the eastern end of the park, the southeastern end of the park. We also want to return to the commission on an update on the joint use facilities with the schools. This came out of the recreation needs assessment. We will be meeting with the new superintendent of the Santa Barbara School District, Mr. Matsuoka, as well as Mr. Bill Banning of the Goleta Union School District, and reaching out to them with the city manager, Ms. Michelle Green. So we look to have an update to the commission on that important item because I know many of you have asked about it. And also, as you've heard tonight on the capital improvement updates, I expect that we will have some additional updates for you at the September meeting to provide updates and also to just keep you current on all the capital improvement projects. And I don't know if I'll have by the September date, but I'm keep your fingers crossed. We may have an announcement on where the recruitment is. So I hope to also give you an update that too. So lots of stuff happening as we come to the end of the year. So I look forward to lots of discussion items in front of the commission between now and the end of the year, which is, as I said, not that far away.
Commissioner Richards.
I have a request that when we revisit the capital improvement projects issue, and we come back to that, that we actually have more than a report that we receive, but we have an opportunity to give input. And I'm upset about some of the priorities and about some of the changes in priorities that we heard about tonight. For example, that the pedestrian path that at Fairview, that it looks like that's slated to be taken away, and I'm very upset about the bicycle path for the San Jose Creek project that was put down on the priority list where it had previously been a lot higher. And I would really appreciate the opportunity for this commission to be able to opine on that and really provide some input.
Be happy to look into that for you.
Were there any other comments toward future agenda items? All right. Just as kind of an addendum to the director's report, I wanted to publicly thank the city council for approving that position. Certainly a much needed additional voice out there and additional set of hands to tackle these many, many projects that are ongoing. So, yes.
There is one thing I think that would be really useful to have a presentation. That there's going to be a huge new open space project. It's the final plans are just about done at UCSB, and they've told us they're going to start in September of this year. I just think it might be useful for you all to know what's going on. It's 75 acres and it's $25 million park, so it's big. They're going to have like two lakes, and I just have been working on it for many years with UCSB on sort of a side project. But I do think Lisa Stratton of UCSB, Dr. Stratton, would be probably the person to go to present it, because now the plans are pretty final. It's not like before, it was real theoretical and they had public meetings and that kind of thing, but now it's pretty concrete. There's a 600-page report online about it. So
if you already have a relationship, can you reach out?
Could
you coordinate with Vito on that?
Yeah. We'd be happy to contact her.
She gave a presentation about 3 years ago. Okay. I don't know if you remember that. It's been a while, but
yeah.
Okay, I'll email Elisa, and maybe in the fall.
Well, talk to Vito first.
Sure.
Yeah, just have one of you.
Yeah. Well, you can contact her.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
All right.
Any last notes? All right, well, thank you very much. We are adjourned.